On pop culture and politics, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great nation where the decisions have been made. The votes are still being counted in some places, but decisions have been made in the crucial decisions as to who is going to be occupying the majority in the House and in the Senate. It will be a Republican majority in the House. And Democrats are accordingly pushing forward with controversial legislation that would be tougher for them to get through once there is Republican control in the House. And by the way, it does make a very big difference what the margins are. If the House actually has what is being projected now, which is it will have 220 Republicans, maybe 221. There are a number of races that are still undecided. But if it has 220 Republicans, it's going to be a very, very rough time because the attempts to begin to undo items that President Biden has, in the opinion of many of us, mistakenly put into place, it's just not that easy. When you have a major spending bill that had in it a proposition for new funding for the Internal Revenue Service, which does include the hiring of 87,000 new employees. By the way, not all of that 87,000 people, not all of them are auditors or tax inspectors. They are not necessarily people who are going to be intruding into your home or anything of the kind. And it is true what Democrats say, that some of the people whose reemployment is being authorized are replacements for people who are retiring. However, the whole idea of paying more money to the IRS administration to demand more Americans be subject to audits, I mean, this is a very questionable item. By the way, also a questionable item is the latest of Trump scandals, and it's a brand new one based upon testimony by John Kelly, his former chief of staff, who says that President Trump on repeated occasions asked him as chief of staff in the White House, and this is a general in the U.S. Army with a distinguished record of service to our country, General Kelly says that Trump asked him on many occasions to force IRS audits of his political enemies, particularly James Comey and Andrew McCabe. And this is after they had left the FBI. And if any of that is true, that is so outrageous because, again, audits are bad enough, as Mr. Trump knows. He has been involved in a very complicated and extensive audit about the world's biggest refund check. And it was, I believe it's the biggest refund check in history. He got in 2012, which was $72.3 million. That was because of the money that he reportedly lost in those casinos he was invested in Atlantic City. But that is another story. The question now about the House of Representatives and the Senate has to do with the Same-Sex Marriage Act, the so-called Respect for Marriage Act. The Respect for Marriage Act, if signed into law, this is from the Wall Street Journal, would codify the ability of same-sex as well as interracial couples to get married and require states to recognize the marriages, rights established in Supreme Court rulings. The bill needed 60 votes to proceed under Senate rules. It got those 60 votes with some 13 Republican senators joining all the Democrats and putting it forward. This was previously voted in the House, and there were 46 members of the House who were Republicans from every segment of the Republican Party who voted yes on this bill. So what about people who, as a matter of conscience, don't believe that the institution of marriage should be formally changed and required? Well, part of what the Republicans went through, particularly on the Senate side and to some extent on the House side, is there were provisions in the bill to protect religious conscience. In other words, to prevent what I think a lot of people dread, which is that if you codify same-sex marriage and protect it from any state effort to roll it back, and this would be pending a Supreme Court decision that I don't think will be forthcoming, and there's no indication that will be forthcoming, there is very little appetite on the Supreme Court, maybe one justice, his name is Clarence Thomas, to revisit the Obergefell decision, because it would be so incredibly messy and, in fact, nightmarish, because what happens to the hundreds of thousands of people who are living in same-sex couples now, who followed the law as it was interpreted? The Supreme Court should not be a source of basically upending people's lives. And it's a terrible thing that there are people who have been scared by the Supreme Court taking that kind of step, because there is no chance. There were even Democrats who were advocating and saying that the Supreme Court is in danger of overturning the Loving case, which guaranteed a right to interracial marriage. And given the fact that both of the black Supreme Court justices, Ketanji Brown Jackson and Clarence Thomas, have white spouses, this is not going to happen. However, part of what this Respect for Marriage Act does, which is very good, is it takes you away from that threat. There will be no further ability on the part of Democrats or activists to try to scare people of the Supreme Court by saying they are going to undo these very basic decisions. And part of what was insisted upon by the Republicans for their support, the Republicans who did support, were guarantees and protections that, for instance, there will be no attempt by the federal government or no attempt permitted by states to use a refusal to perform same-sex ceremonies at an individual church or mosque or synagogue, that there will be no effort to then deny that institution with a tax exemption or deduction. The proposal faces at least one more vote in the Senate and would need approval by the House by the end of the year to become law. Mr. Biden, a Democrat, reiterated Wednesday that he backed the legislation, and the House is expected to pass it after approving a similar bill earlier this year. A dozen Republicans joined Democrats in the final vote in supporting the measure. Historically, many in the GOP have opposed same-sex marriage, and the vote was seen as a test of how much lawmakers' stances have shifted in recent years amid growing public support. While I believe in traditional marriage, said Senator Mitt Romney, Republican Utah, this legislation provides certainty to many LGBTQ Americans, and it signals the Congress and I esteem and the public then I esteem all and love all of our fellow Americans equally. The most recent polling shows that there's over 70% support for same-sex marriage, and a May poll by Gallup found 71% of Americans said they support legal same-sex marriage. That's up from 27% in 1996. The idea that this is truly bipartisan and moving quickly to at a time when there still is a very clear majority in both houses, that does not seem to me to be a horror. It seems to me to be something of a relief. We will be right back on the MedVet Show.
800-955-1776. The Michael MedVet Show.
Now's the time to join the millions of Americans who have changed the quality of their sleep with MyPillow. MyPillow is now off.
On the Michael Medved Show, the Wall Street Journal reports concerning the Respect for Marriage Act, which passed the Senate with a bipartisan vote, with a dozen Republican senators voting with all the Democrats to put it forward. Lawmakers have changed the wording of the legislation in response to concerns about how it would affect religious groups. The latest version says nonprofit religious groups will not be compelled to participate in or to support any same-sex marriage. Declining to do so would not put the group's tax-exempt status at risk, lawmakers behind the measure said. The House, controlled by Democrats, passed a bill in July protecting same-sex marriage, drawing the support of 47 Republicans, surprising supporters and signaling to Senate lawmakers that the measure had a serious shot at passage. When you think about this, it is amazing how quickly American public opinion and American reality has turned on all of this. How we have changed. I mean, it's taken a longer time in terms of interracial marriage. Back in 1967, when the Loving case came down, there were still 16 states that made it against the law to marry someone of a different race. It's astonishing to think about. And by the way, we were talking before about education. Of course children should learn about this aspect of America. And no talking about the progress that is made by things like the Loving case is not critical race theory. It is not some kind of distortion to make America look bad. I think you could say it shows the greatness of the country that it could change and change so quickly, so that today the opposition to interracial marriage is nil. And which is why, I mean, basically this is such a sweeping bill, because it involves interracial marriage and involves same-sex marriage, even though there are no attempts by politicians, by organizations, by major groups right now to try to overturn the legalization and the legal recognition of same-sex marriage. And what I was thinking of just during the break, with this bill being passed now and being signed into law by Joe Biden, one of his most heralded moments as vice president. As you may remember, there was a time when Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and all of the prominent leaders of the Democratic Party were clearly in favor of legislation like the Defense of Marriage Act, which was signed by Bill Clinton, which is, by the way, repealed by this law, saying that marriage is only recognized if it's one man, one woman. And obviously, that goes against the Defense of Marriage Act that was just passed, the Respect for Marriage Act, which is different from the Defense of Marriage Act. The Defense of Marriage Act is now repealed, despite the fact that it was signed by Bill Clinton and supported by Hillary Clinton. And Joe Biden was the first member of the administration and the first leading Democrat as vice president. And apparently, Obama was extremely upset about it. Biden talked about the need to recognize same-sex marriage. He was really the first major leader in the country to go in that direction. And after Biden did, then, of course, Obama had to shift his position, and the administration had to shift. The whole Democratic Party shifted. And now, most Americans have shifted. And why? Because same-sex marriage is no longer an idea, it's a reality. And there are people, I mean, the same-sex couple that I know best, actually two guys, and one of the guys is head of the local PTA in a public school. and very wholesome, committed, wonderful parents. And one of the aspects about this, and I know that a number of the Republicans who supported this legislation were talking about their personal content, their personal connection with this issue. When Leader Schumer, who is the, of course, the majority leader in the U.S. Senate, he'll continue in that role with Nancy Pelosi going away. He was saying that his daughter, and I didn't know this, is married to a woman and they are expecting a baby coming up. But it is very, very difficult to say that there is any gain to making people who are trying to put together lives and to suffer the inflation and the raise in interest rates so you can borrow money and buy a house, start a family, raise a family, to make people afraid that there's going to be some kind of way off the mainstream Supreme Court decision that is going to invalidate your marriage. And I don't think that is a real danger. I don't think that was about to happen. I think it has been shamefully exploited, that fear, by Democrats. But this puts that away. And that, it seems to me, is a worthwhile thing to do. And well, let us go to one of those other aspects of a commentary that have to do with, well, marriage and also sexual harassment and negativity. It is astonishing to me that one of the major Democratic possibilities for president is standing by while his wife testifies about her sexual history with Harvey Weinstein. And we're talking now about Jennifer Siebel Newsom, who has been a witness in the Harvey Weinstein case. She's a mother of four. She appears to be a very brilliant and a graduate of Stanford, and she's a successful documentary filmmaker and a one-time actress, was an Olympic-level athlete, I forget which sport. But in any event, for the past two searing days, Ms. Siebel Newsom, this is the wife of the governor of California, endured a different kind of attention as a key witness in the sexual abuse trial of Harvey Weinstein here in Los Angeles. A packed courtroom watched as Ms. Siebel Newsom broke down in tears, struggling to catch her breath as she testified on Monday night that Mr. Weinstein dragged her to a bed at a Beverly Hills hotel in 2005, where he grabbed at her breasts, forcibly removed her underwear, and then penetrated her with different things, including very personal things. This is the wife of the governor, and she was called by Harvey Weinstein's defense attorney a bimbo. This is unusual in presidential politics. We will be right back on The Medved Show. On the Michael Medved Show, the Harvey Weinstein trial, he's already been sentenced to 23 years for his crimes in New York. He now has seven more counts against him, a different trial in California, in Los Angeles. And he has another trial coming up in London. He was accused by 88 different women of sexual assault, harassment, or outright rape. And concerning the wife of the governor of California, who would be on anyone's list as a possible replacement nominee for Joe Biden, the entire situation is extraordinary. And she testified, this is the First Lady of California, Jennifer Siebel Newsom. She testified knowing that her detailed account against Mr. Weinstein, who is facing 7 charges in Los Angeles, including 2 counts of rape and 5 counts of sexual assault, could invite brutal cross-examination from his defense lawyer, Mark Worksman, who had referred to her in open court as a bimbo in his opening statement last month. How does someone like the governor of California stand for his wife being referred to in open court as a bimbo? I mean, I would expect a more emotional reaction than the governor has provided. The intense confrontations, Worksman suggested that she had invited Mr. Weinstein's sexual advances, to promote her own career. You thought that you could advance professionally by having a relationship with Mr. Weinstein, Mr. Worksman said. Ms. Siebel Newsom teared up, and Mr. Worksman said, "Are you able to answer my questions?" And she said, "What you're doing today is exactly what he did to me," she said. He also accused her of shifting testimony since she appeared before a grand jury in 2020. "As you pulled memories out of the box, you changed them," Mr. Worksman said. Sir, she answered, "he assaulted me," she responded, and cried openly. Ms. Siebold Newsom is one of the main witnesses testifying against Mr. Weinstein. He is already serving a 23-year prison sentence in New York, which is under appeal. He's been accused by 88 different women. I mean, look, this is not a good guy. And part of what they write about here, and this is a real problem, is that this kind of attention, I think, has a truly profoundly negative impact on any possibility that Gavin Newsom is actually going to run for president of the United States, because it brings back a really sordid sexual history, not for her, but for him, for Governor Newsom. He was a mayor of San Francisco when he was married to Kimberly Guilfoyle, and he had an extremely well-publicized affair leading to many lawsuits and divorces on both sides, all sides. He had an affair with the wife of his campaign manager, and then he was involved with an underage woman. And none of this is particularly relevant unless Gavin Newsom decides to go forward with a presidential campaign. At times, Mr. Worksman, the attorney for Harvey Weinstein, appeared unable to resist bringing up the high-profile nature of the witness he was confronting. "You're the wife of the governor of California at the time, and you're about to meet with the police and a deputy DA, and you didn't think that the consequences of what you said was that you would be a victim in an indictment, in a criminal indictment," he said, meaning that she would be involved in the trial, which she is. There's also a development that shows sometimes good intentions don't get you really what you want. Oregon gun sales have skyrocketed after a gun control measure, so-called, it's called Measure 114, passed. People are rushing to buy guns before the effective date. The week of October 30th, the state police received 8,609 requests for gun background checks on prospective buyers. In the following election week of November 6th, the requests more than doubled to 18,000, according to Stephanie Bigman, who's a police captain, spokesman for the police. That has translated to an increased state police backlog in processing the requested background checks and customers waiting longer to walk out of a store with a firearm, according to state police and gun shop owners. The Measure 114 actually bans multiple bullet magazines and also has more sweeping requirements for registration and background checks. It does not take away the basic fundamental Second Amendment right to acquire firearms. Meanwhile, on another front, some good news, and we love to transmit good news on this show, a Bloomberg reporting that the headlines are still screaming food crisis and policymakers remain worried. Sure enough, the prices of a few staples, notably corn and wheat, are still high. But dig a bit deeper, they write, and the scare is all but over. From salmon and chickpeas to lamb and tomatoes, food prices are coming down. Deflation is now on the menu. Yum! It's a sign that global inflation has peaked. From your mouth to God's ears. For central bankers fighting the largest price increases in 40 years, the drop in food prices should give some breathing room to slow down interest rate hikes. For monetary authorities and households in emerging nations such as India and Brazil, where food accounts for a much larger share of day-to-day expenditures, the drop in farming prices is even more important. The fall in wholesale agricultural commodities prices will take some time to filter down to supermarkets, Bloomberg says, and their high energy and transportation costs will still offset some of the declines. Because of the delay from farm to fork, U.S. families will still pay dearly for their Thanksgiving turkeys later this month. But I looked it up, actually. This is one of those areas where President Trump was fact-checked fairly aggressively for his statements. His statements were that you wouldn't be able to get a turkey for Thanksgiving. You will. And yes, you will pay more, but the increase in prices, it's not triple the cost of a turkey. It's 16% more, which can be very expensive. And again, more and more families are doing turkey alternatives. Meanwhile, the ongoing craziness of the tickets for Taylor Swift, and even with everything shut down now, the craziness continues. We'll bring you the latest. Apparently, to get seats behind the stage in Washington State at Lumen Field, you can get them for a mere $500, which is quite a bit different from the 9,000 or 10,000 better seats. We will be right back on the MedVet Show.
Sign up today for the free MedVet newsletter with new columns, commentaries, and movie reviews.
It sounds great.
Go to michaelmedved.com.
Somebody that I know is going to be getting some Taylor Swift tickets. Really. Ticketmaster's homepage had problems earlier this week, and it sounded like this. Clip 13.
People's heads exploded today because Ticketmaster faced millions and millions of people trying to buy tickets, and their website crashed. And they put out a statement earlier today saying it was unprecedented demand, that they sold hundreds of thousands of tickets. There was another pre-sale that they were going to have with a credit card. They said they had to push that until tomorrow because of all of this demand. But you had people who were really expecting, so these are the people who actually got a code, expecting to get on today and buy tickets, and they couldn't. And then those who did ended up spending hundreds or even in some cases thousands of dollars.
Okay. This is really something. I mean, I wonder how this tour is actually going to go. What happens if she gets a sore throat? Or, God forbid, I mean, it could be a national emergency, right? I mean, this is a very remarkable development. Considering remarkable developments, one of the things about President Trump and his speech, which I used the word, and you'll remember this, on Wednesday, yesterday, when we were all reacting to it, I used the word sedate to describe the Trump that we saw. He wasn't boisterous and energized, and it was a quieter Trump, and partially because he didn't talk about the stolen election narrative at all. But one of the interesting things to me is that his speech truly emphasized not just the negativity of the United States that he saw in the Biden administration, and all fair enough. That's exactly what you do if you're challenging somebody who has said, at least so far, he's running for re-election. But it emphasized what a golden age the Trump administration really was, and that raises a profound question. By the way, the economy was very healthy under President Trump. And it's true, inflation was kept down to 2% and below. It was not zero, as President Trump said in his speech. And it wasn't perfect, but inflation was not a problem under President Trump. Unemployment was down at very low levels. By the way, it's down at low levels right now. And we didn't have the supply chain operations. The rise in crime, by the way, had already begun, but it wasn't as acute as it is now. And by the way, it is important to keep in mind, crime is still much less overall than it was back in the 1980s and 90s. But President Trump describing this golden age where America was respected, where we made real progress toward Middle East peace, and we did. And that is will go down as one of, I think, President Trump's greatest accomplishments. But what all of this didn't answer is that if things were so prosperous and so positive, why is it that the American people voted against him? And they didn't just vote against him because of COVID, because they voted against him first in 2018 when he had his own midterms. This is the four-year anniversary of the midterms of 2018, where President Trump and the Republicans lost 41 seats. And he was humiliated by that. I still remember very vividly him coming out and saying that some of the Republicans who lost because they didn't support him enough. When the fact is, if you're losing 41 seats and losing control of the House of Representatives, because it flipped in 2018, and even in the midst of the election of 2020, one of the things that's fascinating is the right direction and wrong direction of the country. You would think with things were so great during 4 years of Donald Trump in the White House, that if things were so terrific, then people would have the impression that we were headed in the right direction. But throughout his presidency, the majority of people thought we were headed the wrong way. And incredibly enough, the right direction view for President Trump in the midst of 2020, when the election was still on, 19%, according to Wall Street Journal, NBC News poll, 19% thought we were in the right direction. 72% thought we were on the wrong track. That's worse ratings than we have right now. And the question becomes here, is it going to work to ask people to go back to that and to a four-year period when basically, most people thought the country was headed the wrong way, and they voted accordingly. I dug up a great piece by Charlie Cook of the Cook political analysis firm, cookpolitical.com. And what he does is he talks about, looks at the right track, wrong track, more than any other poll. That right track, wrong track direction kind of indicates how you're going to do when you're running for re-election. And of the presidents who lost re-election or who saw the control of Congress flip or the control of the White House flip, for instance, presidents who were running in 1980, it was Al Gore. In 1992, in 1980, it was Jimmy Carter, pardon me. In 1992, it was George Herbert Walker Bush. In 2000, it was Al Gore. In 2008, of course, it was John McCain who was running for the... And those presidents averaged a right direction of 24%. For Trump, and this was taken 4 months before the election, the right direction was down to 19%. And that... It seems to me, is a real question on the idea of this golden age. Is that going to be an item for debate? Well, we will find out. We will take a quick look at one of the most critically acclaimed movies earlier this year, which is now coming out on streaming and on DVD and VOD.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
Daniel Kaluuya and Kiki Palmer play brother and sister who've inherited a remote horse ranch that provides animals for Hollywood. But they're troubled by an eerie cloud hovering overhead that simply won't go away. Is it easy to follow this plot? The answer is nope. That's also the name of the movie from writer-director Jordan Peele of Get Out fame. It's now available for rent on multiple streaming services.
Aliens, they're just waiting for the perfect time.
You ready?
But don't.
This is a very weird and at points a very disturbing movie, which gives you plenty to talk about after more than 2 hours of creepy discomfort. Yes, it's incoherent, but it's also compelling, with striking and original special effects and surprisingly heartfelt performances. It's rated R for harsh language and some particularly gory scenes inviting, yes, a killer chimpanzee. 2.5 stars for an irresistibly intriguing film where, despite your inclination, nope, you can't look away.
And on the Michael Medved show, coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about Aaron Blake in the Washington Post. They've done a new ranking on the most likely Republican nominees for 2020. And nope, Donald Trump is not listed first as the most likely. And where is he listed? He is. Because he is running for president. We'll tell you next time. We'll also speak with A.B. Stoddard of Real Clear Politics about, now that the voting is done and the Congress has been arrayed and arranged, what did the midterms really mean? And what will their impact really be? We'll also speak with the author of a very relevant and scary novel about the future, about 2034, and about war, nuclear war, starting in Europe. That and much more next time in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.
Fred Dreyer here for the product I use and love.